Good evening. Okay, Robbie will be in a second. I only have one announcement, which is that after class today, we're going to start having a little informal discussion at the table outside here from 8:30 until 9:15. So just like a little bit of time if you want to chat with people, if you have some things you want to discuss. It's not necessarily going to be an expert Dharma person out there to answer your deepest, darkest, not darkest, your deepest, your deepest Dharma questions. But just a chance to get to know each other, talk about some of the things you've been thinking about, especially if you don't want to like raise your hand in here and ask a question, or if we just go all the way through and you just want to talk through something or just relax for a minute before you get in your car and go home. So super informal. It could develop into something more, we'll see, but like 45 minutes will still be open. So Gary is definitely going to be out there ready to, you know, have everybody introduce themselves and things like that and just kind of get to know each other. So we'll see how that goes. That's it. Any questions? All right. Then Robbie will be in shortly.
Okay, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the second of five classes in the Discovering Buddhism module, Death and Rebirth. And let's see, can I just see a raise of hands of people who are not here last week? I have to raise my hand because I wasn't here. Okay, so that's fine because it will be starting with some introductory material this evening. My name's Robbie Watkins. I've been a member of Kadampa Center since 1993, and I've been studying Tibetan Buddhism since 1981, which doesn't mean I have a lot of knowledge, but I think I can say I've thought about some of these things a little bit. These classes are very much in the form of a discussion, and I'll be hopefully leaving a lot of time for questions this evening. So before we begin, I'd like to start with some prayers in the Golden Prayer Book. I think everybody has a copy in front of you. These just help us to set our motivation, our intention for being here this evening. And we're going to be doing the prayers on page 34. Taking refuge in bodhicitta. We'll read that together three times. And then we'll read the four immeasurables together. And we'll be doing those in English. So it's traditional to put our hands together at the level of our heart. It's common to many traditions when we pray. And people frequently ask, if we're Buddhist and we don't accept the idea of a creator God, who are we praying to? And I'm not going to get into that this evening, but if you look at the words of the prayers, they're really in the form of aspirations or things that we wish would happen rather than saying, please do this for me. So they're all in the form of may or so on. So we can think of them as aspirations. That's the word Geshe Galik, our resident teacher, uses quite frequently. So taking refuge and generating bodhicitta three times. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies. Okay. And we'll begin tonight with a little meditation. Aaron gave some instruction on that last week, but I'll repeat it in a shortened form for those people who aren't here. Meditation means is simply becoming familiar with. It's not spacing out or going blank, but it's primarily becoming familiar with our mind. There are two main types of meditation, concentration meditation, where we place our concentration on a chosen object and keep it there, always bringing it back when it wanders away, as it inevitably will. And then there's analytic meditation, in which we use our mind's ability to reason, think, remember, analyze on a chosen topic. And we'll be doing a lot of analytic meditation later in this course. Tonight we're going to start with a simple breathing meditation, which is a concentration meditation, developing our mind's ability to concentrate. It's there. We don't use it very often. And it certainly can be developed or strengthened like any kind of exercise. We can exercise our mind in the same way that we exercise our body. So we begin by establishing the posture. And any posture that you find stable, non-distracting is fine for meditation. But there is a traditional posture that over the centuries has been said to be a particularly beneficial one to adapt. So whether you're sitting on a cushion on the floor or in a chair, begin by checking that your back is nice and straight. Not rigid, but a little straighter than you normally sit. Your head is maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical, not chin on chest and not tilted to one side or the other. Eyes are either lightly closed or just very slightly open so that light can come in. Either one is fine. Our jaw is relaxed. Our lips lightly closed. With the tongue on the gum above the inner aspect of the upper teeth. Our shoulders are down, not hunched up above our ears, but down and a little bit back, so there's just a little bit of openness to the chest. Our arms are away from the trunk of our body, allowing our air to pass through there. Our hands, we can either put one hand on each knee if we find that comfortable. But the more traditional posture is to put right hand on left, thumbs touching at or slightly below the level of the navel. And it's fine to let them, if you have some pants on or a skirt that makes a bridge there, to let them rest on that. And then the position of the legs is the thing people always get most concerned about. If you're sitting in a chair, have your feet flat on the floor. And if you want to put a cushion under your feet, that's fine. If you're sitting on a cushion, sit a little bit to the front of the cushion. Legs open up, and you can either put right foot in front of the left, one on top of the other in a half lotus, or even go into a full lotus if you're comfortable with that. But the whole point of the posture is to be stable, non-distracting, a posture that can maintain itself so we're not worrying about it throughout the meditation. So take just a moment scan your body, check for any places of tension or discomfort and address them now so that they won't be an irritation during the meditation. And now that we've established the posture to help calm the mind, help it become more settled, more concentrated, more focused, we begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen so that the stomach expands on the in-breath. And then the stomach contracts, coming back towards our spine as we exhale. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And as with every meditation we do, we begin by setting our motivation. And we've already done that with the prayers, but we'll take a moment and specifically establish our motivation for this meditation. And whatever our motivation is for doing it is a valid motivation. If we're just trying meditation out of curiosity, that's great. If we're doing it to help our mind become a little bit calmer, more relaxed, less frazzled, wonderful. If we're meditating because we think it will make ourselves happier, that's a great motivation. But it said that the most powerful motivation, the one that gives the most impact to the meditation to follow, is what's known as the bodhicitta motivation. The motivation that everything I do, even something as simple as sitting it quietly in meditation for a few minutes, is done for the benefit of all living beings, myself, my family, my friends, my coworkers, those people I don't like or have problems with, and all strangers and creatures throughout all existence. And that seems really kind of grandiose, almost ridiculous, when we're first acquainted with the idea, and it doesn't seem a natural way of thinking for most of us. So we have to kind of grit our teeth and force that motivation out and generate it effortfully, as is said. And eventually it will become effortless. But let's just think for a minute on those lines. I am here tonight at Kadampa Center to sit quietly and work with my mind for the benefit of all living beings. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation. The simple one of placing the mind, the awareness, on the movement of breath in and out through our nostrils. That's all. Just awareness of the sensation, of the physical sensation of air moving in and out. Not describing it to ourselves, not visualizing it, not even counting it. Just direct awareness by the mind of the breath. Mind on the breath. Nothing more, nothing less than that. And every time we notice that the mind has wandered away, has been attracted by another shiny object, a thought, a memory, a physical sensation, we simply set that aside and come back to the breath. Over and over and over again. As many times as necessary, bringing the mind back to the breath. And just as we always begin our meditation by setting our motivation, we always end it with what we call a dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something a little bit out of the unusual. We sat quietly for a couple minutes and begun to train our mind to develop our ability to concentrate. And something as simple as this is a virtuous activity. It's a positive activity. It's something that leads to happiness. And we rejoice in this and think, may this positive energy that we've created over the last few minutes not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that is of benefit to all sentient beings. And you can relax your concentration. We'll be having some discussion and questions tonight, and so that everybody in the room can hear you, and also the millions of people all around the world who are listening to this class being streamed, we ask that you use the microphone when you speak. Who's going to be passing the mic tonight? Okay, great. We've got one on each side. Miranda, you were late. Could you please see me after class tonight? Just giving her a hard time because she's here with her mother, which is hard enough. yeah, she thought I was serious. Okay, any questions about that meditation, the posture, the process, what it involves? Okay, it's a very simple meditation, but not an easy one. Now, just sitting and watching our breath is not enough to get us to enlightenment, but to the state of Buddhahood that we aspire to, but it's certainly a skill. The concentration is a necessary skill to develop on that path.
Would you like to elaborate on the karma that you just got by picking on Miranda? Excuse me.
It was done compassionately, so I'm going to assume it's virtuous karma that will ripen in the form of happiness in the future, yes. Yeah. Any other comments? Questions about the meditation? Okay. So this class is entitled Death and Rebirth. Tonight we'll be talking about both and death and rebirth. What's the definition of death? What is death? Somebody want to try and define that for us before I give you the party line? Okay, we've got volunteer up here. Thank you.
Separation of the body and mind.
You're a ringer. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Which is not. What's the definition in the West? In Western medicine, for example, how is death defined?
When your body stops
functioning. When all bodily functions, including brainwave activity, cease completely. It's something that can be measured fairly easily in this day and age. The Buddhist definition, as we heard over here, is the separation of the body and mind. Okay? The body is that physical aspect of our being. The mind is the non-physical aspect. They come together, body and mind, are joined on an average for 77.6 years. During that time, we put the label Robbie or Jill on that association of body and mind, of that body and mind being together. Inevitably, and this is where we can bring the word karma in, even though this isn't a class of karma, the karma that holds that body and that mind together is used up. There's no longer any karma to hold them together. So they separate. The body, the physical aspect, decays. According to the teachings of the Buddha, the mind, the non-physical aspect, continues. So the separation, and it's an exact moment of body and mind, is when, from the Buddhist point of view, death is said to occur. And this is not necessarily when all bodily functions cease, as we define it in the West. There are all these stories about great meditators whose mind stays in their body for hours, even days, even up to weeks after all bodily activities such as a heartbeat, breathing, brainwaves have ceased. And then, at the most propitious moment, according to what this great meditator can see, the mind separates. So the body is the physical aspect, it decays. The mind is the non-physical aspect, and according to the teachings of the Buddha, again, and nobody has to believe this just because he said it, he always said, check it against your own experience. The mind continues, and then because of the workings of karma, that mind or consciousness, I'll use those two words in the meaning of the same thing, comes together with another body, okay, and another label, Joe or Cleopatra or Napoleon or cockroach or, you know, whatever, is put on that temporary aggregation of mind and body. Again, that body decays and the mind continues. Okay? Who in here has taken the class in Discovering Buddhism on the Mind? Few people have. So I'm going to be reviewing a lot of that tonight because we really have to understand what we're talking about when we're talking about mind. So this process of the consciousness rejoining with body after body after body after body is what we call in the West reincarnation, or sometimes we call it rebirth, or sometimes in Buddhist terms we just refer to it as the continuity of consciousness. According to the teachings of the Buddha, again, I'll stop saying that. Everything I'm saying hopefully is according to the teachings of the Buddha. The consciousness is without beginning and without end. We cannot find a first moment of consciousness for the consciousness that we can experience, and there will not be a final moment of consciousness. It continues joining up with different bodies, okay, time after time. We've all had countless experiences of rebirth in the past, and we'll have countless experiences of rebirth in the future. Show of hands. How many people here absolutely believe in rebirth? Am I being picked up? Well, it seems to be kind of going in and out. Okay. It keeps falling off my ear, though. Okay. How many people absolutely believe in rebirth? No doubt. How many people absolutely deny it, think it is not true? Okay, that's fine. How many people think it's more likely true than not true? Okay, how many people would say more likely not true than true? Okay, great. Yeah, so we have people are all over the map. That's good to be a skeptic when you approach the teachings of the Buddha. How many people here live their lives every day as if rebirth were a reality? Okay. Got a couple hands. Good. We'll talk about what that means at some point in this class. What's the main reason most of us give for not, if we deny the rebirth, what's the main reason most of us give for not accepting the reality of rebirth? Can't prove it, and an even more personal one. I don't remember it. I don't remember previous lives. Okay. Do you remember what you were doing exactly 33 years ago today, 33 years ago from today? So that proves that that day didn't exist, right? The fact that we don't remember something is not really that valid a reason to deny something. It's not a reason to believe in it, but just the fact that we don't remember something doesn't mean that it didn't happen. I just want to plant that seed in your mind. Okay? There are lots of things that have happened to us in this lifetime that we do not remember. Okay? Now, it's said that if we develop our powers of meditation, our ability to concentrate and reason, we actually can remember our previous lifetimes. Okay? Most of us are not at that stage, but that is said the great meditators actually do remember our previous lifetimes. So I want to get back to what we're talking about when we're talking about mind, because that's really the basis of everything that the Buddha taught and everything that we talk about in all these Discovering Buddhism classes, so it may not be immediately apparent. As I said, we're talking about that completely non-physical aspect of our being, our consciousness, our awareness, that aspect of ourselves that perceives, that knows, that is aware of. And we're not talking about the brain, okay? The brain is physical. We're not talking about the neurotransmitters or the chemical events that are going in the brain. Now, the consciousness is closely related to those, but they are not the same. The consciousness is this non-physical aspect, this part of us that is aware of, that knows, that experiences everything that happens to us. Okay, so let's just think for a minute. What does that mean? I mean, we've got a physical body. We've got a non-physical mind. According to the Buddha, Robbie can't be found either in the physical aspect alone or in the non-physical aspect alone. The temporary coming together of these two phenomena is just Robbie is just a label that's put on that. There's really nothing there more than physical body, non-physical mind. That's all we are. Okay? So the mind is completely non-physical consciousness. It is without beginning and without end. By that, we can say that every moment of consciousness, of awareness, there is a previous moment of consciousness. And there is something before that. And we can trace them back to last week. We can trace our consciousness back to last year. We can trace it back 10 years ago. We can trace it back to our childhood. At some point, we can't remember, but most of us can't remember what our mind was like before the age of 2. But again, because we don't remember it doesn't mean we didn't have a mind for the first 2 years of our life. Okay? Most of us assume that there was a consciousness there at least from the moment we were born. Okay? So no beginning. And the Buddha said it didn't begin with this birth. There were countless previous lifetimes, and you cannot find the beginning of your consciousness. In the same way, your consciousness will continue in the future without end, having various rebirths but never coming to an end. Okay? So the mind is non-physical. It's without beginning. It's without end. Then what's said is its nature is, again, this gets jargony, but it's said that the nature is in the nature of clear light. Okay? Pure, uncontaminated. Now, most of us looking at our mind, those are probably the last words we'd use to describe our mind. Okay, it's full of angry thoughts, some kind thoughts, depression, irritation, impatience, those are just thoughts that our mind is having. They are not the ultimate nature of the mind. According to the Buddha, the mind is like empty space in which these thoughts arise, one after another. So fast we're not even aware of most of them, but those are not the nature of the mind. The mind is in the nature of empty space, clear light. Okay? And then the fourth thing we say about the mind is that its function is to perceive, to be aware. Cup. Mind perceives cup. Okay, mind perceives cushion. Mind perceives back pain. Mind perceives plans about what I have to do tonight before I go home. Mind perceives memory of a bad experience at work today. Okay, those are the thoughts that fill the empty space of the mind. A series of always changing, always occurring thought after thought after thought. While we were doing the meditation and the train went by, of course, my attention went to the train. I said, that's more interesting than my breath. But I thought, you know, the train going by is kind of like our mind, a series of thoughts. Or we think of a river, water flowing. There's always water, but it's changing continuously if we look at it. So the mind is to recapitulate. Non-physical. Not the body, not the brain. The mind is without beginning and without end. The mind is in the nature of clear light. And the mind's function is to perceive. Four fundamental characteristics of mind or consciousness as defined by the Buddha. The body is much easier. You know, we're familiar with the body. It's this physical shape. The body comes from the sperm and egg. Okay, it has physical precedence. The consciousness does not come from the sperm and egg. The consciousness always comes from a previous moment of consciousness that by the force of karma joins with that zygote in the womb and is born into this life as Robbie or whatever, whoever we are in this lifetime, as cockroach or as Donald Trump or whatever. Think about that. Yeah. Okay, any questions or comments? Okay, yeah. We got a mic. Thank you.
I'm just trying to understand, the mind is actually doing the thinking, not the brain?
Yeah, but if by thinking you mean awareness, knowing, that's a non-physical phenomena, okay? It may produce changes in the brain, but it is a non-physical phenomena.
Okay, so
good question, though.
These
yeah.
thoughts are from my mind.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why it's important that I have good thoughts.
Well, good thoughts, if you like good thoughts, if, you know, most of us, good thoughts make us happy, okay? You don't have to have good thoughts. You can have bad thoughts, but for most of us, that makes us unhappy. But the Buddha says, this is, if you want to be happy, you have to understand how your mind works.
Okay.
You're not just going to get lucky. You know, you have to have some ability to understand your mind and to control it.
Okay, yeah, thank
good
you.
Good questions, yeah. Anyone else? Okay, in the back.
In the process of reincarnation over and over and
mm-hmm.
over, how do you grasp the fact that 400 years ago there were a billion people on the planet,
uh-huh.
and today there's 10 billion people on the planet?
Yeah.
How do those beings, where are they?
Yeah. That's a good question, and it brings up a lot of important points. Number one, the number of consciousnesses in all existence is not changing, okay? Because, like I said, they're without beginning, without end, so they're not new consciousnesses being created or consciousnesses being destroyed. So the first thing is, animals, insects. I think the insect population is increasing even faster than the human population. And then, again, to use that phrase, according to the teachings of the Buddha, there are other realms besides the human and the animal realms. Those are the two that are visible to us. But our consciousness can also take form in what's referred to as the God realm, which is a very pleasurable sort of existence, a demigod realm, which is good but not quite as good, the human realm, okay, the animal realm, the hungry ghost realm, which is a realm characterized by neediness, by wanting, by never having enough. Sounds like the human realm, but it's actually even more so. And then what are referred to as the hell realms, which are realms of incredible suffering. Okay? Our rebirth, and I'll talk a little bit more about this, but our consciousness being joined to a body in one of those realms is determined by our own karma, our own positive actions and negative actions, not by a god or a Buddha who's saying, zap onto a lower rebirth or zap onto a higher rebirth. But it's determined by karma. And the most important, though not the only karma that determines it, is the state of our mind at the time of our death. And we'll talk about this next week a lot more, in that none of us know when we're going to die, so it behooves us to start working with our mind right now for when our number comes up. Okay, so consciousnesses are moving in and out of all those realms, and we've all been reborn in all those realms countless times in the past. And it's said the human realm is actually the most beneficial sort of rebirth, even more than a God realm, because we have the right mixture of happiness and suffering in this lifetime to motivate us to spiritual practice. If we're born into a pure pleasure realm, you know, we just lie back and enjoy it and don't work on developing our minds. So a human rebirth is considered highly favorable. Okay, now the hands are coming up. Yeah, okay.
Would you repeat what you were explaining before about how karma comes in? Because I got the part about the body, and I got the part about the mind.
Yeah.
How does the karma get in there? And it was used up, so how did it get full to get used
up? Okay. Karma is... Yeah, now we're getting into a whole nother class. Karma. Karma is our past actions of virtue and non-virtue. Okay? Our good actions and our negative actions. Everything we do, everything we say, everything we think makes a karmic impression on our mind, on the non-physical aspect of our being. Okay? So we have countless... I don't know if the actual term is called bokchaks, but you can call them little karmic units that are being carried on our mind stream. And according to certain circumstances, certain of them ripen at specific times. So right now, all of us are experiencing the karma to have this mind and body in temporary union. But that single piece of karma will eventually be used up. And that's when the body and mind separate. So, again, this is a good question, because these are some of the things I want to mention. Just to backtrack just for a minute. According to the teachings of the Buddha, ATV. According to Buddha, yeah, I like that. ATV, we have different levels of consciousness. We have our coarse or gross consciousness, which is what goes to work, gets irritated, falls in love, thinks this is a nice person, that's a bad person. That's our coarse consciousness. Then we have a more subtle level of consciousness, which we experience in dreams. Okay? We experience when we're fainting. That's said to be a more subtle level of consciousness. sexual orgasm as a more subtle level of consciousness. And then below that, below the coarse, the subtle, then the next one's called the most subtle. Seems like they could have, that's probably a bad English translation. The most subtle level of consciousness. That's the clear light, empty space consciousness that carries the karmic imprints. When we die, and we'll go through this meditation in 2 weeks, what is said to happen at the moment of death, the coarse consciousness dissolves, okay? The subtle level of consciousness dissolves, and only the clear light consciousness continues into the future, carrying all the karmic imprints from all previous rebirths that haven't been used up. That most subtle consciousness goes into what's referred to as the bardo, which is the intermediate state, okay, between rebirths. And that can last just a couple minutes. It can last up to 49 days. And the bardo is apparently very different from Raleigh, North Carolina. It can be a very disturbing place if we're not familiar with what it's going to be like. So what happens if we haven't practiced experiencing the bardo is our karmic seeds, some of them ripen very quickly and cause us to grab on to the next body. Okay? And that occurs when the mother and father are in sexual intercourse and the egg and sperm are joined and the consciousness says, I want that rebirth, and goes zoop into the fertilized egg in the mother's womb. Now, if our consciousness is more developed, it takes its time in the bardo and picks the most favorable rebirth that is available to it. It kind of picks and chooses. I think it'd be good for me to be reborn in Puerto Rico tomorrow because I think I could really help people there in the next few years. And it chooses that because that's a way to benefit others. Okay, so then as that consciousness joins with the physical body, then the subtle consciousness and the gross consciousness reappear. But the point is, we don't carry, as most of us know, memories of past lifetimes are gross consciousness, okay? That's why we don't remember them, because they're shed at the time of birth. It's not like my personality is going on. The personality is part of our gross consciousness. That's dropped. Now, for a highly developed meditator, we may remember that, but it's not our personality, what I like and what I don't like, that goes on to future rebirths. It's this most subtle level of consciousness. It carries all the karmic imprints, but not my gross consciousness of this lifetime. Does that answer what you're saying? Okay. Good. Good question. Next. Okay.
The hunger ghost realm, physical or non-physical?
It's what realm?
The hungry ghost.
Hungry ghost realm. Okay. There is a consciousness, non-physical, and there is a body. It's not physical in the. Again, this is way over my standard or my teaching level here. There is a body. It's physical, but not in the physical way that we know this body. It's not something that we can reach out and touch. I mean, it's on a completely different, it's not like it's out in outer space somewhere. It's just different, okay? That's not a very good answer. But there is a body and there is a mind there. But the consciousness, the mind, is what we experience in this lifetime. But the body, though it experiences suffering and is in pain, is a very different body from what we have here in every aspect. It's not a very good answer. This is where I use my cop-out and say, that's a good question for a Geshe, for a high teacher, yeah. But good question. Okay.
My comment, no, is kind of karma DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, all living beings
mm-hmm.
are developed based on the same principle of the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So the DNA is having a code,
mm-hmm.
instructions, making proteins, develop tissues, develop a rabbit, develop a human, develop a tree, develop a grass.
Mm-hmm.
But in the bottom is the same principle, I could say life, expressing in different forms.
Mm-hmm.
So we are, in certain way, could be a kind of expression of the life, as could be a rabbit, as could be a tree, as could be a grass. So different expressions of the same life.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is related with this life, which is expressing in different forms based on instructions, like a programming computer. They have instructions, no? Build organs, build mm-hmm. trees, build...
Mm-hmm.
So there is instructions over there. This life, I could say, that is expressing in different forms, what is this? Is this the consciousness? Is this intelligent design who is making all this kind of stuff?
Mm-hmm.
How this relate with this concept? Because see, when we see, for example, that all living beings have the same root principle expressing.
Mm-hmm.
So how is connected with this consciousness? That is this big consciousness, the so-called life, which is making, let's see, or the karma is saying, okay, now the instructions for you is to be an ant, or to be a rabbit, or whatever, because we are having this potential of instructions, but at the same time are very physical, scientific, that we could go and change the DNA, and suddenly we have another being.
Mm-hmm.
So how is this merging of the scientific and approach that we know more about the living beings?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is not an easy answer. No, it's just a reflection, trying to bring mm-hmm. this knowledge that we have now
with
DNA mm-hmm. and some kind of stuff.
But we have more knowledge. You know, we've broken the body down into smaller and smaller particles, and we know. You know, we know how DNA can be broken down into smaller particles, but that's still the physical aspect of our being, okay? It's not the consciousness, this part that perceives, this non-physical aspect of our being, okay? And the fact that my consciousness is united with this body, physical product, of the DNA, not denying that at all. I mean, I think it's very congruent. The fact that my consciousness is temporarily united with this body, which is a product of the DNA that I obtained from my parents, that's what makes Robbie in this lifetime, okay? But my consciousness, my mind, did not come from my parents' DNA. It is a non-physical phenomena. So according to the ATB, it had to come from a previous non-physical moment, okay? Physical body had to come from physical precedents, even as minute as DNA. Non-physical mind had to come from previous moment of mind. I mean, that's the model the Buddha gave. There's no reason you have to accept it. But I don't find it any discrepancy between that and the fact that we're becoming more knowledgeable about the physical makeup of the body. And that now neuroscience is starting to look at consciousness and trying to figure out what is, where the phenomena of consciousness comes from a Western scientific point of view.
You connect that now, sorry, expand me a little bit, but now with the old learning machines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are facing machines that are a certain way. I am still reading a book that computers now are co-workers.
Yeah.
So, suddenly the mind, this machine have in mind, the learning
machine. I don't know if we'll ever have a machine with consciousness as we experience it. Okay, let's take a couple more questions. Okay, over here, and then we'll go over here.
I saw a couple shows on television. I know at Duke University in Virginia, there's actually departments that are studying reincarnation, mm-hmm. rebirthing.
Yeah, yep.
And there's all
Ian Stevenson was a big guy at the University of Virginia.
Exactly,
yeah.
Stevenson. And mm-hmm. They document these stories where, you know, somebody's born and all of a sudden they're having these experiences
yeah. mm-hmm.
that belong to somebody else.
What was it,
else.
The Search for Bridie Murphy? What was that? Yeah, there was a famous book back in the 60s, yeah.
And would that be akin to some of the great meditators can break through to the
yeah.
past? It's just that somehow there was a conduit.
These people have these, and it's particularly common in children, okay?
Yes, and most of them are children.
And usually it's either taught out of them or they forget it. And there is some sort of karmic imprint such that they remember more than most of us do.
Yeah.
And that's typically part of the process of how they identify the Dalai Lama. His reincarnation, you know, the Dalai Lama dies, and then it may go for a number of years. I mean, the next Dalai Lama is not recognized right away. You know, it may be 5, 10 years or even longer. And typically one of the things they're doing is, you know, they put out an array of objects, and the child who is identified as the rebirth of Dalai Lama will go and pick up those that were his in a previous lifetime. He retains some sort of those imprints, but that's considered exceptional. Yeah, it's not the rule.
No.
Mm-hmm. Most of us,
fits.
Yeah,
fits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
So my question actually kind of is related to the question about the living beings and adapting with consciousness and. It actually has more to do with, like, so there's the god, the demigod, the human, the scary ghost or something
yeah.
like
mm-hmm.
that, and then hell. But my question is, if there's the human realm, where do animals and plants and other sentient living beings fit into that? Because I didn't really catch that part, or I don't really understand that
well,
part.
Well, just to start off. According to the ATB, plants don't have consciousness. Okay, they're they're alive, but they're not considered sentient beings in that they don't have consciousness. But animals certainly exist in the same realm as human beings. Yeah, so I'm not quite...
So what I'm trying to understand when you were talking about the different realms where
yeah.
there's like the god, the demigod, the human,
yeah.
the ghost,
mm-hmm.
something
right.
ghost,
yeah.
and then hell, where do animals or the cockroach or whatever it may be, where does that fit into that?
An animal rebirth is considered less favorable than a human rebirth in that most animals are not beloved house pets. You know, they're well taken care of. Most animals are cockroaches, ants, things like that, who spend most of their lifetime trying not to be killed, to get enough to eat and not to be killed. And they don't create it's very difficult to create a lot of good karma in an animal rebirth. Okay. Is that what you're asking?
It is.
Yeah.
But I was curious if that actually does that actually fall in like the, I know it's not as scary. So it's actually more like the earth versus human, or is it,
it's all animals on the earth. Yeah.
Okay.
They exist in the same physical environment as we do. It's not like they're animals off in other realms. We're talking about All the animals on the planet Earth, yeah, and any that may be out on other planets.
Okay, so a living being doesn't necessarily live in hell.
Right.
Essentially.
Yeah.
You're still a living being.
Yeah.
You mm-hmm. might feel like you're living in hell sometimes.
Yeah, we have some sense of what a hell existence is like, but we're not actually in the hell realm where that experience is continuous and nonstop.
Okay.
Again, we wind up there by virtue or by non-virtue of our own karma, not because someone is sending us there to punish us. Okay.
Okay. Thank
you. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see. Let's take a couple more. Yeah. Okay. People who haven't asked any questions yet.
Well, I have questions about, you mentioned the meditation that we're going to do and how the different parts of the mind mm-hmm. fall away and how that works in hand with the death the physical death process.
Yeah.
But you don't need, if you're going to get to that at another class.
That's in 2 weeks, yeah. That's
okay.
A whole class. It's a very complicated meditation, but it's considered very important, the going through the death process, and His Holiness the Dalai Lama does it 4 times a day. He considers it so important. Yeah, so that's in 2 weeks, preview of coming attractions.
I have a question about karma.
Yeah.
I hope it's not off-putting to say that I'm a little bit skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a genuine question. My question is, how is a virtuous action separated or distinguished from a non-virtuous
action?
That's
a great question.
Seeing as a lot of what we consider to be good things can demonstrably come from...
Okay,
from
that's a great question. It's a profound question. It's a simple question. ATB, a virtuous action is one that leads to happiness. Happiness for whom? Happiness for the person who's doing it. Okay, I can be incredibly generous towards Jill, and it may not make her happy. But an act of generosity on my part puts a karmic imprint on my mind stream that will inevitably, without exception, result in happiness for me at some point in the future. Maybe not immediately, but at some point. A non-virtuous action is one that places a karmic imprint on my mind stream that inevitably will cause me to suffer at some point in the future. It's very simple, but how do we know that? Okay, how can we tell at the time? We can't. We don't have perfect vision, complete wisdom. So we say that actions motivated by love, non-attachment, non-hatred, non-attachment, and non-ignorance. And by non-ignorance, we mean by understanding reality. Actions motivated by those tend to be virtuous. Actions motivated by hatred, attachment, and ignorance more than likely are going to be non-virtuous and cause suffering in the future. So it's not somebody, not a god or anything, who's determining that's virtuous, that's non-virtuous. It's kind of the ultimate law of reality, like the law of gravity of the Buddhist world vision. Virtuous actions lead to happiness for the person who's doing them. Non-virtuous actions lead to unhappiness. Is that kind of what you're asking? Yeah, great question. ATB.
According to the Buddha, is the consciousness an individual entity that always was and always will be?
Yeah.
Distinct consciousnesses?
Yeah. My consciousness is not your consciousness in that my karma is not yours.
And you never share them?
They don't meld into some... unless maybe at some higher level of teaching than I'm familiar with. But in general, we think of consciousnesses as being individual. Okay. The fact that we're all together in this room tonight indicates that at some point in the past we've had some similar karma. to create the cause to be here. But we each have our own consciousness and our karmic imprints go on my mind stream. You know, when I do a virtuous action, it's not going on to your consciousness. Okay? At least in the level of Buddhism that I'm comfortable teaching about. I mean, there are all these higher teachings that may posit some sort of interaction to a greater degree than that, but at this level, talking about these things, it's better to think of an individual consciousness. Okay? Okay, be skeptical. That's good. Skeptical is good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah.
So I had a question about the consciousness of a Buddha or a Bodhisattva.
Mm-hmm.
And this concept of breaking cyclic existence.
Yeah.
Do they, have they gone outside of that? Will they experience rebirth?
Okay, yeah. Again, talking about the experience of a Buddha or a Bodhisattva, someone who's completely compassionate, is beyond my pay grade. But for those of us who are not Buddhas, i.e. have not developed complete wisdom and compassion, our rebirths are said to be forced. They're forced on us by our karma. Okay? We don't have the choice not to be reborn. Now, when we achieve the state of Buddhahood, it's said that we've used up all that karma that forces one rebirth after another on us, and we have complete choice. We can choose to exist as pure consciousness if that's the most beneficial thing, but if to help others, to benefit others, it's more beneficial to be reborn as an ant or as Jill or as this or that, the consciousness of a Buddha chooses that.
And it always will. So if they choose a lower rebirth, then when that karma has...
They're still a Buddha, yeah. Yes. You can't become a Buddha and go backwards. Buddha is a point of no return. Okay. Yeah. You know, they're just temporarily assuming the form of a cockroach. So that's why I said you should assume every living being is a Buddha. Every cockroach running for cover when you turn the lights on is a totally enlightened being there to teach you something.
So the Dalai Lama is, as far as I can see, the most enlightened being there is,
mm-hmm.
that I'm aware of at the moment. And I know that when he was young, he recognized items and things like that. Has he ever talked or expressed any the memories from previous lives, because he obviously has this amazing consciousness? Or
not that I'm aware of, but anybody's open to contradict me. Yeah, you know, he very much, you know, he says, I'm a simple monk. He downplays, you know, that he's a possible manifestation of Chinrai, the compassionate aspect of the Buddha. He's, so I have not heard him talk about that. I don't know if other people have or not. But there are other lamas who talk quite freely about previous lifetimes, yeah. But I have not heard him in specifically, yeah. Okay, one more over here. Harry Scott.
You were talking about the different levels of consciousness, and the second level was basically dreams. Do you feel that at that level that...
That's one, that's, I mean, it's not just dreams, but it, for those, that's one place where we get in touch, where we have an experience of it. Okay.
So you think that,
but that consciousness is, you know, it's not just dreams.
Okay,
not
but,
just
it, but that can fall into that level.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you think that that may be a connection from an earlier consciousness, a dream possibly?
Oh, it has to be, yeah. It's a non-physical phenomena, so it has to come from a previous moment of consciousness. Yeah.
Explains a lot. Explains a lot.
Yeah. I had the weirdest dream. I was traveling with some friends, and I dreamed that one of them's mother was sick, and her daughter said, I think we need to check her garlic level. She may need a garlic transplant. I couldn't figure out where in the world that came from, because we hadn't been talking about garlic or anything. I think she needs a garlic transplant. The mind is a very mysterious place. Yeah. Okay, let's do another meditation. Great questions. Thank you very much. It's really fun to think about these things, I think, and interesting. Okay. So now we're all pretty experienced meditators. So begin by checking your posture, starting with your back. Take three deep breaths from the abdomen. And now set your motivation. And having set your motivation, we'll begin with a couple minutes of the breathing meditation like we did earlier. Just the concentration, the awareness on the movement of the breath in and out through your nostrils so that the mind becomes a little more concentrated and focused. We're not spacing out. The exact opposite, the mind's becoming more alert. And now we take our concentration off the breath, and we're just going to look at the flow of thoughts through the mind. One thought after another, after another, in the non-physical phenomena known as mind. We're not going to get attached to any of them or caught up in them. Just notice them. We hear door opening. We remember what happened today at work. We've got an itch. My leg hurts. Traffic floating by. Just notice one thought after another, after another, after another. There's never an instant in which there's not a thought in the empty space of consciousness. One after another, after another. And now we begin to trace our thoughts backwards. There's my mind and what it's thinking now. And that's connected to my mind and what it thought at the beginning of this meditation. They're not the same, but there's a connection. And that's connected to what I was thinking when I first got to Kadampa Center this evening. And that's connected to my thoughts when I left work today. And that's connected to my thoughts while I was eating lunch today. And that goes back to the very first thought I had on waking up this morning. And that's connected to any dreams I can remember from last night. And that's connected to the last thing I can remember before I fell asleep last night. And that goes back to what I can remember from where I was a week ago. And where I was a month ago. And that goes back to what I remember from the first day of this year. If I can remember that, but I know there's a connection of mind. And we can trace our thoughts back 5 years, 10 years. Back to our college days. back to graduating from high school. Back to our first day in elementary school. Back to the very first memories we have from this lifetime. There are enormous gaps, but we know there is a continuity there. The content of the thoughts is changing, but there is this continual flow, this river, this empty space in which these thoughts occur, these memories. So just trace your thoughts back. As far as you can. And we can end our meditation with a dedication, acknowledging that we've done something a little bit out of the unusual that has made a beneficial imprint on our mind stream. And may that ripen in a way that is of benefit to all sentient beings in all realms. You can relax your concentration. So thank you, everyone. That was a great discussion. I appreciate everybody's participation. Erin has some homework to hand out. I think she has an announcement to make.
The homework is on the table right there, but also if you don't like paper, or you're going to lose the paper anyway, or if you're listening, streaming online, it's posted online. So go to the Discovering Buddhism material page. The homework is there. If we run out of paper, I can make more copies. And the handout, which is the same every week, it's just kind of about this class, we ran out, but I can make more if anybody doesn't know what that is. That's also posted online on the Discovering Buddhism page.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody wants to join us for a discussion.
Non-moderated, no answers guaranteed to any questions. That's outside. Next week we'll be talking about what's called the 9-point death meditation, which is an analytic meditation on subjects like death is inevitable. We don't know what time our death will occur, what's going to be useful to us at the time of our death. And then the week after, we'll do the death process meditation, which involves a lot of visualization and lights and colors, and it's a fascinating meditation. It's very complicated, so we'll take a whole class to explain that. And see you all next week. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't seen that. Yeah, thank you.